This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The U.S. Department of Defense is one of the largest organizations in the world. It executes a budget more than twice that of the world's largest corporation. The size and complexity of the department's acquisition processes, along with the rapid pace of change and budget austerity, make it imperative that DoD create a more agile, responsive, and efficient operation. Doing this will provide the best support and services for troops in the field, their families at home, and enable the department to be responsible stewards of the nation's resources. What is DoD's Acquisition Visibility Initiative? How does it provide key data and information to decision makers so they can manage, oversee, and streamline the department's acquisition portfolio? What's next for acquisition visibility within DoD? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Mark Crisco, Deputy Director of Enterprise Information within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. Mark, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Mark, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you could provide us with an overview of the mission and focus of DoD's Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. Can you describe us a little bit about the acquisition function as well?
Sure, I'd be glad to, and thank you once again. But acquisition technology and logistics, the undersecretary for that, the Honorable Frank Kendall, is the undersecretary overseeing the department's acquisition. It's both the policy, the processes, as well as the procedures and the major programs. The undersecretary is responsible for all of the activities, including logistics, maintenance, support, and principally he is the decision maker for the department to make the decisions on major programs.
And the second part of my question with regard to that was, what were some of the key elements of the acquisition management in DoD?
Some of the key elements are making the decisions on the major acquisitions, working with Congress, working with the President on fulfilling the mission area for the Department of Defense, obviously a key mission area for us and how we protect this nation.
Would you tell us more about your role as Deputy Director of Enterprise Information? What are your specific responsibilities and duties, and could you tell us about the areas under your purview?
I am the senior leader for the Acquisition Data Information Management. We represent, on behalf of the department, acquisition information and management. Our responsibilities are data management, our role of providing that to both the undersecretary as well as analyst. Our responsibilities also extend in working with the services so we can have clarity of data and information management as a department. I like to think about it as we would want to be Amazon.com for acquisition data. So we will tell you, as it relates to acquisition information, what the authoritative information is, where it is, how you can get it, and where the organization that provides it to you.
With that, with those roles and duties, what are your top three challenges that you face? And more importantly, how have you sought to address those challenges?
Some of the top challenges are managing authoritative acquisition information. Those top challenges of acquisition information principally have been the providence of systems and system providers. We've tried to elevate them and bring them up to a department level so we can manage data in an authoritative fashion, be sure that we understand the pedigree or heritage of that data, and make sure the department is using it, that we're only asking for the things that we need to do our jobs and not be inefficient in the way we handle data and information.
So along with those challenges, leading an organization focused on using data and information to manage major acquisitions can be fraught with unanticipated consequences and surprises. To that end, what has surprised you since taking over this role?
What has surprised me is how much the need and the recognition of the need of data and information management from an acquisition perspective, not just from a technological perspective. It's difficult, sometimes dirty work of working through the definitions, the policies, the processes, the provenances of the data. But I've been surprised on how that need has manifested itself into services and components. The Army, Navy, and Air Force have been extremely behind us in terms of our efforts of trying to identify what are the authoritative sources here so they could pivot, so to speak, around what our data, what we call the acquisition visibility data matrix, what our data is going to provide, what we require for them, how we're going to use it, and how we're going to present that to the undersecretary.
So given your experience running the area that you run, what are the characteristics of an effective leader? And to what extent does the new cross-boundary environment call for a different conception of leadership to your mind?
The type of leadership that is required in this area is extremely collaborative. It's listening to customer needs, being able to be an active listener and reflecting back both to industry, to those who are acquiring information. We really have a small paradigm that we work with our customers, and that being the undersecretary, the assistant secretaries, and the senior leaders in the department. We always ask a few very simple questions. They seem basic, but it goes a long way in helping us understand what they're trying to achieve. We ask them, one, what are they trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. Two, what are they trying to see? How would they like to see it? And what data do they think they need to support that decision that they have to make? That goes an awful long way, and I view that as very collaborative and very much in the act of listening. We need to focus on training people to better understand how to articulate those needs so we can better understand how to fulfill that and how to better manage that across the department.
What is DOD's Acquisition Visibility Initiative? We will ask Mark Crisco, Deputy Director of Enterprise Information within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How are changing work habits and technology decreasing the federal government's real estate footprint? And how are VA and HUD working to end chronic homelessness among veterans? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We go beyond the buzz to introduce and connect our readers to actual public sector executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Crisco, Deputy Director of Enterprise Information within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. So, Mark, making a tough policy decision on major acquisition systems inevitably gets the attention of everyone from the Secretary of Defense, Congress, and even the President. Your office plays a significant role in informing those decisions. To that end, I'd like to discuss the strategic vision that shapes your efforts. Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. I'd be glad to, Mike. I'd like to point something out first. I am not the decision maker. We really see that as the Undersecretary of Defense and drafting off of his, because what Mr. Kendall owns are both the policy, the process, the people, and the performance of the organization. We have and represent a tractable problem in that of managing the information and focusing on the data and information to provide him, his staff, and the services. So what do we do in terms of that? We make sure we collect it. We make sure we manage that information very well. And we analyze the data to understand the behaviors of data, not behaviors of the decision and information. But I find ourselves very much to be the fuel to the analyst to understand what they need to analyze. We take away some of the questions that they would ask. Where did it come from? What does it mean? We can help them along their line so they can do better jobs in terms of their analysis, so the decision makers can make better and informed decisions without worrying about the data in and of itself. Our focus is to define and govern, make the data available, and provide them with some tools to help present that to them so they understand what they're working with.
Interesting. So the message is clear that data and information are key to managing, overseeing, and streamlining defense acquisition. Would you tell us more about the Acquisition Visibility Initiative, its vision, mission, and goals?
Yes, I'd be glad to. Our vision is to provide authoritative data to the decision makers, have well-managed information management from the value chain perspective of acquisition, not just a technology perspective. And being able to manage and coordinate that data and define that and make that transparent to the organization so we can tackle the problems that we need to tackle.
So, Mark, how does having this data empower DoD leadership?
The data empowers leadership by providing them a view of what's going on in the department. And the decisions and the processes, as you might imagine, are quite extensive. We have structured processes, structured procedures for handling this so we can decide, so the undersecretary can decide how best to support acquisition decision-making. Our role is to make it transparent and make it clear where we are, what we have, what we don't have, and how can we share that across the community, do it once and use many.
So you mentioned earlier that one of the areas is data governance or governance in your purview. What is data governance and how critical is it to have a focused data governance strategy to do what you do?
We hear it an awful lot in the city about governance. I'd like to move that up a bit and talk about it in terms of, I like to say it's big G, not little g. So it's big governance. What big governance means to me, what we've been doing in the department, is we have senior staff across the OSD and the Office Secretary, the senior principal actors there working with us to help adjudicate what data do we need. Let's ask once. We also have the services a part of this discussion to say, can we do this? Can we not? Is it valuable to have this information as a part of our decision makers? So we have the experts, senior leaders, subject matter experts, by and large, who are charred and chartered to solve the acquisition decisions, whether they be the Army, Navy, Air Force, or whether they be an Office of Secretary component, whether they be research and engineering, logistics, procurement, or acquisition in and of itself.
Your office is in within a niche field in which discussions are laden with really technical terms like service-oriented architecture, semantic technologies, agile methodologies. Would you define these specific terms for us, and how do these technical approaches assist you in meeting your mission?
It's an interesting question, and at best, probably not trying to define all of those terms and to bore the listening audience about what they are. I think the important thing about all of the technology in terms of infrastructure, in terms of practice, in terms of technique, can best be described as they are new methodologies that management can adapt and employ to move forward. They are opportunities for us to manage our data better, whether it be semantically, whether we can work in data in small buckets or small pieces and understand how it's constructed, how to put it together. Whether it's service orientation, whether we think about service orientation of, in our case, we ask the services, we don't want to build interfaces. Can you publish your information and can we subscribe to your information? So we've tried to put these terms into practice and working with the purest of technologists, not only talking about it as an end in and of itself, but an end that can support what we're trying to achieve as a department in acquisition data.
So no technology, organization, or process is a perfect solution. And DoD's work to implement acquisition visibility came with numerous challenges. Would you tell us more about the obstacles and challenges? And why, more importantly, why has data transparency always been a primary obstacle?
Well, there's a couple points I'd like to make on this. One on the challenges. Our size and diversity just make it difficult in and of itself. We are a big organization, multinational, if you'd like to think about it that way. I think the complexity of the topic of information management at an organization as large as the Department of Defense requires a fair bit of rigor and thought about how best to handle it based upon our size, complexity, and the issue. How do you manage data for a multinational organization when your data is as complex as the department's? And also, there's no single answer. There is no monolith out there. If there was, we would have probably employed it by that. But you have to continue to slog through that. I also believe, on your question of data transparency, I don't believe data transparency is the problem. I think the issue is data management and information management is. And what do I mean by that? As a community, we've, in some cases, we've not really done a good job of stewarding what information we want and need to manage. I think this is where we've taken steps forward to sit here and say, what value, why do we do this? Because oftentimes you hear, well, there's a ton of data, there's plenty of data out there, but we don't know the context for that. So bringing stewardship over data management and the transparency and the clarity of what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve really goes a long way in assisting that, assisting us moving forward.
Well, you mentioned the complexity of the organization like DOD. I'd like to explore breaking down organizational boundaries and barriers. How did you align your efforts with focus across groups? And to what extent is DOD's acquisition visibility a case study in cross-organizational leadership?
Well, I'd like to think it was a case study, and I think it would I would like to think of it as a good case study, but it is always difficult to work across the organizational boundaries. I always like to say we can blame Jefferson and Madison for the way we're organized as a federal space, but in our various organizations, the keys to that are positive communication, positive collaboration, and positive clarity. So in our case, we're really not viewed as a threat across the seams because we aren't the decision makers. We're just working on the horizontal piece of data and information to the good of all, not to the good of one as opposed to the other. That requires a fair bit of collaboration from everyone on our team, and our team is works diligently on being sure that we collaborate across these institutions and try to give more away than we get back. So in our minds, it's strong collaboration as well as clarity of what we're trying to do and how we're trying to achieve it.
What lessons have been learned in implementing acquisition visibility within DOD? We will ask Mark Crisco, Deputy Director of Enterprise Information within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. This is The Center This Week, highlighting the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness, brought to you by the IBM Center for the Business of Government. I'm Michael Keegan, Managing Editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Center This Week is our opportunity to inform and, most importantly, to invite you, our listeners, to use the IBM Center for the Business of Government as your resource, a how-to resource for improving government effectiveness at the state, local, and federal level. The framing of an issue often dictates what follows. When it comes to extracting purchasing savings, most procurement executives in either the private or public sector look at the obvious targets, their biggest areas of spend, and their spend with their biggest suppliers. With today's renewed emphasis on strategic sourcing in the private and public sectors alike, the best way to leverage an organization's purchasing power may be to bring a new focus on procurements made at the edge of the supply chain, both in terms of what is being bought and with whom the transactions are made. This is the promise of what has become known as tail spend management. And today it is clear that for organizations of all sizes and types, tackling the challenge of the long tail of their spending is one of the best ways to reduce cost and streamline operations. And for government today, tail spend holds perhaps even more significant prospects to deliver savings, efficiency, and compliance than in the private sector. What is meant by the concept of tail spend? And what are the better ways to manage the long tail of acquisition spending in public sector agencies? We will explore these questions and the IBM Center report, Controlling Federal Spending by Managing the Long Tail of Procurement, with its author, Professor David Wild of Southeastern Louisiana University. Professor Wild provides the first quantitative analysis of tail spend in the federal government. Welcome, David. It's great to have you back on the show.
Good to be here today. Thanks for having me.
David, your report's publication is timely as the federal government continues to seek innovative ways to reduce costs in an era of sequestration and tight budgets. Before we delve into it specifically, I'd like to explore the focus of your report, tail spend. Would you elaborate on what is meant by the concept of tail spend?
Tailspin is a rather new concept, and a lot of times you'll see people do a double take because they don't think they heard you quite correctly. But tailspin is a concept that has migrated from some penetration in the private sector world and now being applied to the public sector world. And in a nutshell, what's meant by tailspin is that it's procurement outlays that are outside of the organization's spend under management. That includes acquisitions made either or both outside of the organization's core supplier group and for goods or services that are beyond the norm.
So, David, you also provide a conceptual model for managing tailspin, which I'd like you to elaborate on. Can you tell us the key components of your tailspin management model?
Well, the first step in any effort to address tailspin is just raising awareness about what tailspin is, what it encompasses, and why it is different from the organization's managed spend. And that is key so that there is a grounding in terms of what is being talked about when we say tailspin. And it's also key in terms of getting buy-in from acquisition executives and procurement staffers. And that's very necessary up front in order to get support for the effort, because there's got to be commitment and buy-in from the stakeholders in the acquisition area as to why this is an important matter to address. The second area is to look at spending from the standpoint of spend analysis, and saying that, again, this is not meaning that there's going to be more work dumped on an already overtaxed and undermanned acquisition staff. That tailspin really is to be driven by spend analysis, which is conducted by third-party experts looking at the spending for the agency and looking at where there can be tailspin management efforts put in place to better manage the spend. In terms of the spend analysis, the Defense Acquisition University, in fact, this year put out guidelines for spend analysis and saying that for any agency, you should look at spend analysis in terms of, you know, who did the buying, who did the spending, who was the requesting agency, how much was spent, and what type of contract award was used, what was purchased, what acquisition method was used, what type of contract vehicle was used, and who received the work. And if you're looking at tail spend specifically in the spend analysis, there's three other areas that I think are very important to address. That is, when was the purchase made? What quarter of the federal fiscal year was it made? From where geographically did the request come? And particularly if you're looking at DOD, state, any operation with global presence, it's particularly important to look at those purchases that are made from far-flung and non-CONUS locations. The third area is just simply, was the procurement made in full compliance with acquisition policies and procedures? And the goal here is not a witch hunt in terms of what was done wrong, or looking back and saying, you know, in the past, you know, these areas fell outside of core spend and should have been addressed. It's looking forward proactively. What kinds of savings, what kinds of operational efficiencies, what types of true competition can we promote going ahead into the future to better manage our tailspin? The third area of the model is simply looking at the spend analysis and engaging in a spend sorting and clarifying exercise. And again, this can be done in conjunction and in cooperation with the third-party experts in terms of spend analysis and in terms of tailspin, they're beginning to really have a presence in the private and public sector marketplaces. And it goes beyond just simply saying, you know, looking at spend items for goods and services and saying, okay, this is tail spend, or okay, this is core spending. It really gets into looking at spend in detail to see, you know, where there are opportunities to better manage the seven categories of tail spend that we talked about earlier, and then finding out what the potential returns are to be gained both from an operational standpoint and from a purchase price saving standpoint. The really final step in the model is spend implementation. And I say final, but it's not a final step that ever ends, because spend implementation means looking at managing tail spend not as a one-time, one-shot endeavor, but thinking about it as an ongoing process. How can we improve our spend management, both in the core and in the tail of our spending, to produce better results in the public sector world for the taxpayer?
David, there are some common themes that emerge from your efforts to better manage tail spend in the federal government. What are those themes, and more importantly, what does the future hold, and what are some of the next steps?
Well, a common theme is that this is an area that acquisition executives should want to address. It can be done in a way, bringing in third-party experts who will conduct the spend analysis and then look at, in conjunction with acquisition leaders and acquisition staffers, look at what falls into the organization's tail spend, how big it is, and then look at those specific seven categories of tail spend and develop strategies for addressing those. The chief benefit of this is that in this time when we have continuing budgetary challenges, by producing bottom line purchase price savings, the acquisition function can produce some quite important results and fairly quickly. And this will heighten the importance and the standing of the acquisition function within the agency overall. The second real motivation to do this is that it can be done without overburdening the existing acquisition staff, and in doing so, you know, it produces a win for the acquisition function without simply loading this onto the acquisition staffers as an additional task. The third real benefit is that you really see that the return on efforts to address tail spend can be self-funded. I mean, the expenditures necessary in terms of carrying out the spend analysis will generate far more, and perhaps very far more, savings than what it would cost in terms of the outlay for the third-party services. And I'll remind listeners, and to delve into this in more detail, that my approach was knowingly being conservative in terms of the savings projections. And that's why I provided the multi-point savings targets for agency leaders to look at in terms of what each agency, and in the DOD's case, what specific agencies within the DOD could hope to achieve through tailspin management efforts. And even my maximum expected tailspin savings numbers were roughly about a third of what some private sector experts recommend for for-profit organizations. So saying that, you know, in the governmental world, if we can address this in a meaningful way, you know, there really is a huge potential for recapturing savings on the goods and services that fall into tail spend. the final thing that I'd like to say about the themes that emerge is the irony is that by focusing on the tail, it may be the best way to improve the core strategic spend areas for the organization and for the federal government and agencies within it. And this is what has been found in the private sector world, that, you know, by focusing on tail spend, you're bringing more spend under management, and there's solid numbers and solid evidence that the more spend you bring under management, the more savings that can be garnered through such efforts and really done without overburdening existing acquisition staffers and making the equation one that would be very favorable today for acquisition leaders to look at addressing.
More information on this and other center resources is available at businessofgovernment.org. There you will find how the business of government is not business as usual. For the IBM Center for the Business of Government, I'm Michael Keegan, and this has been The Center This Week. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How can serendipitous collision change the way agencies do business? How are changing work habits and technology decreasing the federal government's footprint? Get your latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We go beyond the buzz to introduce and connect our readers to actual public sector executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Get your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Crisco, Deputy Director of Enterprise Information within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. So, Mark, perhaps you could share with us some of the key success stories as a result of the work you've done in making acquisition visibility a viable environment. Are there any other related pursuits that have borne fruit?
Well, I think there are three things that we've accomplished that I think have been are pretty much foundational and significant for the department. One is in the data management area. One, as I've said earlier, working across the Army, Navy, and Air Force, they've been very supportive of our efforts. We intend to publish the acquisition visibility data matrix later this year, promulgate that in policy so we can find our pivot point of what information we're going to control. So I think that's a key to the data/information management perspective of this. Another success story that we had, the Undersecretary, the Assistant Secretary for Defense Acquisition, Ms. McFarland, asked us to work on different views for her. She wanted to look at the data based upon industries, based upon portfolios. She asked us to create a selected acquisition watch list. Well, with our partners, the Defense Acquisition Management Information Retrieval System, we were able to build views for her in less than 6 weeks for her to better analyze the data. So turn data into information with only a few small aspects of that, but do it rather quickly, assist her in making the decisions, and assist the department and working with the department to use that information. A third and a very important aspect that we launched about 6 or 7 months ago into full production, we have the Acquisition Information Repository. Working with Defense Technical Information Center, based upon their wiki strategy of managing data, we were able to acquire and put all of our acquisition documents that support the acquisition decisions in those wikis. Now, we just started from the programs as they're going through decisions. We did not go back to the beginning of time because that would have been a pretty extensive proposition. But this is already bearing fruit now that we have in one location information that we can use as a part of the decision-making process and information we could start to analyze about, are we using that? Was it meaningful when we pulled that information together? So creating a horizontal look. That, too, was built in about 6 months to fully deployment, and it's up and operating today.
So, Mark, you identified some of the challenges to acquisition visibility within DoD, and then you highlighted some of the success stories. What lessons have you learned from this effort?
The first lesson I always like to say it's not just about technical data management. You really have to have the subject matter expert steward the data and information, understanding the behaviors of why it is. I'd mentioned this earlier, too. One of the lessons learned, ask the simple questions. They're sometimes the hardest to answer. What are you trying to achieve? What do you want to see? And what data do you need to help you see that? Because it's very easy to work across the perspective and say, I need this data, but without a structured approach for understanding that, it's difficult to ascertain because you have multitudes of sources. And I think the third thing is collaboration, and this is where the acquisition visibility data matrix will help us. When they answer those three simple questions, we can look and say, do we have that data? Does it mean that? Or should we be asking for more data? Is the value? We just do not chase data on an individual basis, but we chase it as a complete construct of providing the information. The lessons learned are you must be diligent pursuing these passions. It's easy. Just give me the data. We'll figure it out when we get here. I think we need to structure our discussions in some structured fashion for us to move forward.
Mark, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the matrix. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
We started this a few years ago on the acquisition visibility data matrix, where we quite simply wanted to understand a couple things. One, what data do you want? Two, who owns that definition? And three, where is the authoritative source of that information? So that sounds very easy. It sounds like it could be done in about 15 minutes. What we've found is identifying those who own it, many would lay claim to that. We were struck by a very particular lens, though. We looked at it from the lens of acquisition. So we looked within our own acquisition community for stewards of that data and those definitions. Because we wanted to be unambiguous with the services and components, those using the data, those providing the data, to make sure that they understood what exactly it was going to mean. So we wouldn't have discussions, well, I thought it meant this. I thought you were going to use it this way. We offer that degree of clarity. And we set a very low bar working with our services, as I said, in terms of saying, where should we get the authoritative source? Not to delve into their prerogatives and organizations and tell them where we were going to get it from, but know exactly where the authoritative source is. I could think of a few examples of that case. We hold the acquisition program baselines for all the programs in the department within our system. I know that authoritative definition, what it is, and I know where it is, and that's in the Defense Acquisition Management Information Retrieval System. I also know with a colleague of the Performance Assessment and Root Cause Analysis Organization that earned value management data is in the earned value management central repository. We know where the authoritative information is. We know who would define those terms. We can create a bit of unambiguous behaviors in the department by having that degree of clarity. And that's why I think clarity is important. We have about 200 or 300 definitions and working with them. The most difficult thing about coordinating it, sometimes people just think of it as a system definition. And I said, no, it is really about organizational defining what it is. The systems will adapt. Let's understand what our authoritative definitions are, and we can work through the transition planning aspects as they might be.
The devil's always in the details, but I'd like to discuss the next steps for the acquisition visibility effort. What are your plans to expand the use and functionality of AV's capabilities within DoD? And more importantly, to what extent is the AV a model for future federation and integration of numerous data sources?
Well, I'd like to think that we were there to be a model. I think we're learning how to be a model. I think my number one objective is it's never expand. I think about it as I want to be measured on how well are we supporting the undersecretary in his Better Buying Power initiatives? Are we providing value to his decision-making? Are we providing analysis? We thought contemplated this long and hard and thought about it as an inside-out strategy. No one tells me what apps to use on my personal device. People know which ones are good. We desire to be good in providing them the information they need and the authoritative source of. So we measure, while we measure our successes, many people typically do. How many users do you have? Are they accessing it? The question is, are we providing value and clarity to them? And that's a different metric to measure, but it's something we're focused on. One of our obvious goals are to promulgate the acquisition visibility data matrix in the department. I declared earlier in this year it was going to be the year of data. Having that personal framework as a part of the framework of the department offers a point of discussion for others and where we can collaborate. If you're in, we're not going to solve all the problems in the department, but in terms of acquisition, if they know where to go to find that answer, they know what we have. We could talk about what we don't have in terms of organizational control. I believe we also need to work with, in our infrastructure providers, largely the OSD CIO, not the DOD CIO. So working with the OSD CIO, we want to be sure that he has established a framework to support our activities. We're contemplating how we're going to an app like world in the future in terms of managing information, where technology can be provided very quickly. We also want to be sure that we're clear and transparent and work with our partners. The comptroller, the procurement organizations, they are all have a myriad of data sources and data sets. How do we take what we have and work and collaborate across the other space? And finally, certainly leverage the best practices of the department. We got a lot of very good things going on in many organizations and the best practices of industry to move us forward.
Well, Mark, I want to pick up on an initiative that you mentioned earlier, and that's the Better Buying Initiative. What exactly is that?
Well, the Better Buying Power Initiative was chartered by the Undersecretary of Defense, Acquisition Technology and Logistics, originally Dr. Carter, but furthered by Mr. Kendall, in terms of improving the department's decision-making, processes, and people. It's a far-ranging document in terms of how and specifically what he would like to approve in the department and as a part of the decision-making. We have a bit, a small portion of that, and we're focused generally on the data which supports those initiatives. So in reviewing the Better Buying Power 2.0, we looked for what were the key points of data that we don't have that we may need to pursue. Measuring affordability targets, measuring different aspects of operations and sustainment costs. We knew we didn't have strong definitions, so we moved down those perspectives to get that information and move forward to better support him through the Better Buying Power.
Hey, you bring us back to data, and there's a lot of folks out there who say there's a lot of data out there, but not much information. What's your perspective on this insight? And more importantly, for our listeners, what's the difference between data and information, and how can you take data and convert it into information to inform decisions?
I think that's a great question, and I think oftentimes we use the information synonymously. And while it appears interchangeable, I think there's different values for that. Data does not necessarily equal information. So in thinking about that over the past few years, data may or may not capture a fact. Generally, it is much more fact-based. Information is always based upon context, analysis, judgment, calculations. They're key tenets that information, because that's where the decision-maker works, is with information. That in and of itself may not solve the problem. And depending on the context of the data, the analysis of the data, the judgment of the data, or the calculation of the data, I think he needs to do both. I believe the department has taken definitive steps under Mr. Kendall's stewardship. One, by having strong data management. Two, insisting that his staff use that data as they form their analysis and judgments. And finally, using that data and that information that his analysts and advisors provide him as a basis of his decision-making. I think there are key facets here. We're at a better point today of understanding the difference between data and information. We will need to continue down that path of understanding what those both concepts mean.
Well, Mark, there's an explosion in mobile technology and the use of smartphones, and you referenced earlier the term apps. I was wondering, how are you folks leveraging the power of such platforms to deliver on your mission? And do you have plans to adapt an app-like thinking for data management?
Oh, absolutely. That's the number one, of having an app-like thinking of data management. We've done a few pilots. As I said, working with the OSD-CIO, our goal is to have a fluid architecture that can adapt as we bring applications or apps into the marketplace. We learned in data management that we could go off and pilot and solve solutions in 2 and 3 weeks using open source data, using data we have in-house, but we didn't have a framework that we could have a landing pad for it in a production environment. We're working now with the OSD-CIO to figure out what is our glide path to that. And if I ever get invited back here in 2 or 3 years, I'd like to say that that was up and running and that we've created an app mentality. We think about it very much, and it's a term that's not used much in our space, but from a customer's perspective, what information do you need to do your job? Can we better articulate, can we better understand and become, frankly, data scientists to understand how best to fulfill those needs without a long, expensive journey to get there? And I think apps hold a fair bit of promise for us. And it doesn't matter if we have a different app than someone else. They're usually low-cost provisioned items that can be readily deployed and readily taken down.
You just mentioned the thing that's front and center is the data is interesting, but you really need to tailor it to the customer's needs. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep your end users or customers' requirements front and center in your efforts?
Constantly engaged with the customer. If you know my background, I came from a retail background in a land long time ago. It's understanding what the customers are, and the customers are always our first. And our paradigm of trying to understand what they're trying to achieve and being active listeners always make them the most important. And we have no delusions of our own importance. It's the customer's importance of what they do and their success. So in that regard, we listen very actively to keep our customers front and center. We are also transparent of what one customer said to other customers. Here's what they were trying to achieve. Here's what they wanted to see. Here's what data they're using to see that. Does that help you? No. Do you need something else? Were you trying to achieve something else? So we can get a lot of reuse. We can create a lot of alignment along our customers, because in many cases, every customer is unique, but every customer is also the same. And there are different decision points, and we're not venturing too far. We know which ones we have under control. There are other decisions that are extremely complex and extremely technically deep that are sometimes best left outside of the central norm.
What does the future hold for DoD's acquisition enterprise information? We will ask its Deputy Director, Mark Crisco, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How are VA and HUD working to end chronic homelessness among veterans? What is national health security, and how do we get there as a country? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Crisco, Deputy Director of Enterprise Information within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. So, Mark, I get to talk to many of my guests about their use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve management operations and program outcomes?
I think partnership is key. And obviously, I think collaboration is key, both with industry and internally. I think about it in a few segments because there are dimensions to collaboration, and dimensions being differences in collaborations. We have a strong partnership and collaboration with functionally across the department, which means research and engineering, the comptroller, the procurement community, logistics, as well as the components working with the Army, Navy, and as well as the other components. And then on another side, we also collaborate technically, because we're really pushing some of the thoughts and the questions that they would like us to push from a functional perspective. And that being the DCMO, as well as Small War System Center Atlantic, DTIC, DISA, the OSDCIO, and the DODCIO. Trying to understand where they are and where fertile ground is and where we can collaborate and create opportunities for that. Federally, and probably structurally, we typically go through our organizations internally to work across the federal spaces. So if it's a CIO type of organization, we would go through the CIOs there because they would set the tone and the tempo there. If it's functionally, we work with the appropriate functional organizations as it moves across the federal space. And we are to participate across as much as we can these days in terms of difficult times, both in resources and time, working across the federal space. So a lot of witnesses to a lot of collaborations in industry, understanding what they're trying to do, what they're trying to achieve. And frankly, we try to keep up on where the greatest amount of turn is. We want to understand what industry can bring to us in our thinking. So we listen a lot. It's a lot of learning for us to think about how best to operationalize those thoughts, those concepts that are being put forward today.
So, Mark, you've taken something that can be very complicated and technical and made it easy to understand our conversation today. But it does beg the question, what kind of skills does your office really focus in on? And what are you doing to have a staff that is technically skilled and well-trained?
I think that's probably one of the greatest challenges that we have. It's not the people. It's necessarily the skill sets. We found people that have very strong technical skills but may not have the functional skills, or very strong functional skills and not necessarily the technical skills. We've tried to create an environment for the organization to learn from each other. Learn, have the technical work with the functional, have the functional work with the analytical, have the analytical work with this. You hear the terms of agile collaboration and sliding down that. I found that not difficult, but not easy. I always would like to steward the collaboration is the key, and letting go is a key of seeking first to understand, then to be understood. There is not a right answer here. So it's trying to create a collaborative environment across multiple skills, encouraging the multiple skills. So mentoring employees, mentoring vendors into collaboration, making sure that we understand that we are clear of what we're trying to achieve, and then be active listeners on saying what are various ways we can understand that. I think we also try to push them out of their skill comfort zone. Sit in someone else's seat and understand what they are trying to solve. And that's where some of the three questions help us guide ourselves through that of the understanding. And certainly, as a part of structure, we just allow and encourage them to learn everything they can. I think about the skills that are necessary here, and it is not just one skill set. It's not just acquisition. It's not procurement. It's not just service orientation. It's not just Java. You need to have an understanding of what, where the dialogue is, some very big, very large communities, and understanding how to make them realistic for yourself, and I think as well as the organization. And I think that is a bit of our future of our workforce. We like to move at a very fast velocity of providing data and information to the undersecretary. Both sequestration as well as furlough has presented some challenges for us and our workforce in that environment. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for our workforce personally. They're struggling through furloughs. I struggle through furloughs. And it's difficult for us to, frankly, get our job done. It's difficult for us to keep us coordinated. And that's just the personal aspect. I think it also hurts